now speak.
Yes.
One of the things that greatly impressed me when I came back after the war was this invitation to a very, very wealthy lady that was my aunt, really. She was somehow related with us and had gotten very wealthy. And she had bought a diamond ring in Europe somewhere, and I was to bring it over to her. And that was the reason why I was invited into this luxurious home. And there were other people invited. The young man that I was supposed to marry before I ever went back to Germany, that I didn't like and ran away from, was there with his wife and two daughters, invited to the same dinner. She wanted to show me what I'd passed up, but all I went through, and as poor as I was, I wouldn't have wanted them for us than even then. So it didn't matter too much to me. And I might tell right away, that beautiful woman, rich and capable and as she was in life, took her own life a few years later by throwing herself off a high building. So,
how come?
Because she was so unhappy over this Hitler war and so alone, and on top of it, her son, her only son, married into a Jewish family, which she didn't like either. And he was in the banking business, the kind of bankers that where we say today these loaning money businesses where they have one foot almost in jail. And he got very immensely rich. She got him to meet too, because he knew me from my first time with him. Well, those are the things that happened in that early time. And as I said, I was always looking for an out or for something to do mentally to keep me from grieving, because my baby wasn't here and my son wasn't here. But I kept very busy. I worked my way up in the beauty culture, learned it, and worked my way up in the business. And after a while, the time came where I was invited to come to California. Friends of mine had come. But what they forgot to tell me was that I couldn't work here in California in my work without going through the state board. In New York State, you got your certificate from the school you went through, and here, there was a state board to go through. Well, nobody would hire me without license to begin with. Then I could have worked in the hospital in Los Angeles. I had a friend there that was a head nurse or something, and she said I should go and take applications and sign up. And one of the last questions was, how long have you been in Los Angeles? And I said 2 months. And they hired nobody unless they were here 2 years in those hard times. Well, she said, now I can't do anything for you. So I kept looking, and it was really, really hard to find work. So I lived way out past Manchester and Los Angeles, and to get downtown took you an hour. And I came from New York, where you had three different ways to go all over in the city, and I thought, oh, Jesus. I thought, what a hit town. And I would have gone back, but I didn't have the car fare back. So this particular day, I took that car again that went so slow all the way downtown, going to school, because I tried by paying them a little something and going on what they call a refreshers course. I found a way how to apply to get into the state board and what I had to do. And at this day, I was finished with the 2 weeks. And I sat in the streetcar and had German California Zeitung under my arm. And a lady sat next to me, and I opened the paper to see if I couldn't find work anywhere, even scrubbing if maybe in the German paper they were looking for someone. And she saw me turn to that page and she said, "Are you German?" And I said, "Yes." And it turned out she came from the same town as I did. And she said, and I told her what I was looking for. She said, "You know, in my neighborhood is a little beauty shop, and that girl just got married, and her husband has a French delicatessen downtown, and she wants to rent out or sell her beauty shop so badly. She owns that house where it's in. It's in the front room." And right there and then, it was on North Main Street, she went with me, and we went to find that girl, and what ensued, I had a laugh after. I worked, my last shop where I worked, they paid $350 rent, and she said, "Well, here it is." She had a marceline and a tray and a sink and a manicuring table, and that was the whole beauty shop. In a front door, about like they used to have in those houses, that had a big bay window and a separate screen door and another door to go into that beauty shop. And she worked there and had a clientele, but only marceling and shampooing. Well, it was on December, I think the 14th, and I bought it. And she said, "Well, here it is. It's $10. Well, I didn't know, did she mean $10 a month or $10 a day? "Oh, what?" And I said, $10, and looked around, and she said, "Is that too much? That includes your telephone. See that hole in the door? I put the phone out, and that includes the hot water. Is $10 a month too much?" And I knew it's saying that I had $10. I thought, well, if I don't make that, I make nothing. And it was right in proximity of the county hospital. So you got lots of nurses and workers from there. And I said, yes. But I haven't got $10 with me now, so this Mrs. Schmidt was the lady's name that I met, and she paid down $2 from the beauty shop, and the beauty shop was $25, but I didn't have to pay it all at once. I could get started and pay it out of the shop. Well, when I had it all ready, big streamer on the window, permanent wave, $1.95, I still have a photograph of it. And with my nice new uniform and everything, which you could rent those days, and some German person gave me credit at the bank so I could get the stuff from the jobbers that you needed. Somebody had a guarantee for me, and there was people, friends. And I got started, and I never forget when I the day I opened, it started to rain, and it rained, and it rained a solid week, and not a soul would come out. And from New York, you go out in the rain, and I said to that Madame Besson, Mrs. Besson, "Don't the people go out in the rain in California?" And I think she had a hunch how hot up I was, so she would come home at noon and from her delicatessen and bring me a great big sandwich and push in a pot of tea and a little radio, so I could play that. And I said, "Well, I can't keep this up too long." She said, "You wait till a week before Christmas. You'll be working day and night. Then they all get fixed up. Now in this weather, nobody wants to get fixed up. They're not going anywhere." But there I sit and twiddle my thumb. And I put that radio on, and that radio had a Unity program on. And I was so taken with it that became my church for the rest of the year. And I went then to a Unity church too, and that helped. And my cousin they had come too and moved to New Jersey by then. Oh, no, this is out here in California. They had come to California too, and they kept my boy while I was working, and later on I put him in a school. And that worked out good, too. But the depression here had, by a long shot, had not ended. And if I hadn't the gumption and the help that people gave me, I couldn't have found no work, you know how. And I had that boy. A boy wants to eat at 12 years of age. Because even in school, they gave him little jobs. that he could work an hour extra putting books away in the library and things like that. He always helped along all he could. And I think now looking back on it, I never, and the parents of those years, never had much trouble with their youngsters because they didn't have the money to spoil them like they do now. They get everything, so they have to go and murder even to get thrills and use alcohol when they're 14 years old. And part of it is our wealth and the ignorance of people and parents. I must say I was lucky that my boy, I never had a day's sorrow or worry with him. And I have the nice family, but that's jumping ahead. I mean, even my grandchildren are nice. Well, then...
After it quit raining, did anybody ever come in?
Oh, yes, and I couldn't take... I was working at 12 and 1 o'clock. I took them as long as they came because I had to. They all wanted... And then again, the week before New Year's, I had two good weeks. But there was a thing going on here that I never heard of. They wanted their work done on the cuff, and when the hospital paid them, then they'd pay me. So a lot of people owed me the money, and I didn't know enough to call the hospital to see. I asked that lady to head the shop. Oh, yes, I had to do that, too. You have to do that. But she should have said, you want to find out if they're really employed, otherwise you take the money and go and you never get... And that's what happened the first 2 weeks. I lost quite a little. After that, I just called the office, and if they were employed there, they had to pay their debts or they lose their jobs. So I made out pretty good in that shop, and I was there almost 2 years. Then I got a very, very bad case of tonsillitis. And here I was pretty far on in years. I must have been close to 40 or going for 40. And whoever that doctor was, I looked for the cheapest doctor, cut that too deep, and I nearly died after that operation. Had to go be taken only for the fact that that German friend came in to my house after they brought me home and saw that I was fainting. She ran for a doctor, and the ambulance came, and I had lost so much blood that they had to give me I don't know how many pints of blood, because my boy, he didn't know what to do for me. And that threw me back. I had put a Spanish girl, a Mexican girl, into my shop. I should have closed it. And most of my customers were gone. Some had found other beauty parlors and so on. So I was looking for a duplex anyhow. By now I had worked my way out a little financially where I could live and have a front room turned into a beauty shop, which I did, and I moved closer to the hospital. So I was there a few years and made friends with hospital workers, and one very good friend of mine was Mrs. Darby. And she had a girl, same age as my boy, and we became very close, and Mr. Bobby worked in the hospital. Then something, and our children had just changed into junior high school, which was Lincoln High School, and a boy got murdered, and got shot. And so Mrs. Bobby said, I'm not going to stay in this neighborhood. It's getting too rough and tough for me. And I had something happen to me, too, coming home from the rehearsal, from the singing chorus. It was late, and I thought I'd walk my 3 blocks and not wait for a bus that I had to change on Griffin Street in Maine. And when I walked under the trees near to the hospital were pepper trees, the trains went through there, yet on the street, a guy jumped off the tree on top of me and threw me down and was going to attack me or something. And I saw, trying to wriggle up, I threw him over. I managed to throw him over, and then I saw way off the bus coming. And I started to run and scream, and he ran after me. But when he saw the bus, he turned the other way. And when he got in the light, I saw it was a young boy, a Mexican boy. He couldn't have been more than 17 or 18 years old. And then when I got home to my house, I saw him flee and run away. So I walked home. Then, no, I stopped the bus. The bus stopped them in front of my door, called up the police. And the police said, what are you doing out in this hour of the night alone, you see? And they wouldn't bother her. And some nurses, young nurses, got attacked at night. And they never got him until those boyfriends of the nurses watched late for him with whistles, and they caught him and gave him. That's how we found out it was a young Mexican boy over sex or something. But that scared me up the neighborhood so hard, too. So Mrs. Darby says, I'm going out to find us in Highland Park.
What kind of people lived in the neighborhood there?
Mexicans, Italians, all. But I, my clientele was from the hospital, you see.
And what, the different kind of people work at the hospital?
No white people, but white people mostly. But this could happen in the white, now it happens in any neighborhood. But those days it wasn't a very big exception, and because that boy tried it more than once, he got caught. Not by the police. The police, they had too much to do to keep watching women that came home at 1 o'clock at night, things like that. They said to you. So, well, I heard the news all in this beauty shop, you know, what happened after to the boy. And then, as I said, Mrs. Darby got scared, and I got scared too, and we thought our children at that age shouldn't grow up or go to high school in that neighborhood. So she found herself in Highland Park, a place, and she saw a store that had a sign out that wanted a partner. It was a store for two people. So in the evening, I went out and looked at it, and I moved into that store and had right in the neighborhood an apartment. And one of my customers was a young girl, was going to work and made pretty good money, and she asked me if she could move in with us. So that way we could afford that apartment, my son and I. And that's where we stayed. And the depression didn't let up because the highest money I got in that store in Highland Park, which was real expensive, I didn't sell many at that price, $5, regular for $1.95, and everything was very cheap. You had to work very hard to keep up two homes. And but what made it easy for me, there was a radio and a shop that had these units and radios and televisions and all. They asked me if my son couldn't work there Saturdays and evenings when they wanted to go out for dinner and things like that. And that worked into a very good job for my son. In fact, it was called the Interphone Company. Berndes was their name, and he showed my son the whole trade. He could repair televisions and all those things. And later on, he got as much as $25 a week, which was a big help. And when he had to go to war, when he joined the army, and he was sent to the European War Theater, which made me feel very bad because, well, now he's got to shoot at his own grandparents, maybe a bomb. And but then he could be used as a technical soldier. They made him a technical sergeant. And he signed up before he had to go, much to my chagrin, because being German, his friends all thought that he would maybe not want to go. And so he wasn't of age yet when he went to the War Department, and one day I got a letter to sign, because he wasn't old enough, and I wouldn't sign it. And not that I didn't want him to go to war, but I said, you wait until you have to go. And he was going to college in Pasadena, in junior college. And I said, you wait until they tell you to go, and I'm not going to sign you in. And then if something happens bad, I think it was my fault. It was only maybe a half a year or so that he had to go anyway, or a year maybe. It wasn't 21 yet. And that's what happened then. And of course, I went through a lot of bad times because the money was hard to come by. And all the people, especially elderly people and old people, I didn't have much money. I sometimes washed old people's hair for 2 eggs or for half of a loaf of bread, whatever they had, so my moral wealthy customer said to me, "Oh, you can't do that, Mrs. Getz." My name was Getz. And you need your money. You can't give all your stuff away like that. Even the customer said it. I said, "What are you going to do when you get older?" Well, I said, "I'm not going to worry about that." Oh, we were in that Highland Park, had pretty poor times too. And I was shocked one Christmas when they brought me what I call the poor box. A box with a turkey in it, celery and cranberry. Oh, it looks good. I said, "No, bring it to somebody poor. I don't even know. You were recommended to us. I don't know who turned me in, but they thought I could use it." And we could, but I mean, it was a feeling for me to be something like that given. Well, I went along there for a while, and I had in my clientele a Mrs. Berger. Oh, yes, what I learned as a specialty was how to cut wavy hair with the razor so it would fall in waves and didn't have to be set. And for that, I got a little more than for plain haircut. And people would come from near and far and like that haircut. And one of the ladies, on a Thursday, a whole car full would come all the time. We're from Inglewood. And this Mrs. Berger I got pretty well acquainted with. And she came once a month to get that haircut. And all of a sudden, she didn't come anymore. So I said to one of her neighbors, "Where's Mrs. Berger? Is she gone?" "Oh, don't you know she died? She died on cancer in both lungs." Now, here was a woman that never smoked, but she died. She had a rapid kind of a cancer. She died in 7 weeks. And then these same women that came with her and talked about her talked to him that they knew a very good businesswoman and said my name, and he knew me, never had seen me, but knew me through his wife's talk. And I knew him even better through his wife's talk, because women talk when they get their hair done. So finally they arranged and brought him to my house, and we got acquainted, and the woman told me he was very wealthy, but I wasn't ready. I wanted to get married maybe sometime in life, but I wanted to have my son educated and out because I didn't want any complications. And he was we always called him a diamond in the rough, a wonderful man, and he did have plenty, and ready to give me everything he had, because he was the kind of person that knew how to make money and had money, but he didn't know how to invest it, and he didn't know what to do with it. He let his wife take care of that. And so the women said to me, "You have everything you want. He won't even bother looking at it once you marry him." I said, "Well, he never treats me, never takes me to a restaurant, just a car ride to his places he owns to collect money. And even if I hint I'm hungry, he doesn't invite me." I said, "He might have all that money and I might have to stop. I'm not going to." He promised me a new car and he promised everything. So when he wanted to get engaged and asked me all the time, I said, "Well, how about the ring? Aren't you going to give me an engagement?" "Oh," he says, "you don't go along with that foolishness. That's just for certain people, choose to make money with." I said, "Oh, yes, I do. I wouldn't get married without an engagement ring." And then I found out later on that he didn't know how to go about it. He was always out on these oil fields in Mexico and South America. He was out of touch, really, what went on, because he said, "My wife got our rings. I gave her the money, and they only cost $5. I said, "Well, I wouldn't get married like that." And he wanted to get married with me, but he was going to have just a plain, no engagement, nothing. Well, I said, all my life I wanted the diamond ring, and if I don't get a man that's going to buy me one, I'm not going to get married. So he brought Mr. Langton. I still get with Dick Hart from them. We're still friends. That was his insurance man, and he did everything for him, you know, what was writings and business stuff. So he brought him in to my store and introduced me. And then Mr. Langton said, "I understand you would like to have a diamond ring." And I got kind of embarrassed, you know, to be confronted like that. And he said, "I suggest you go downtown and have lunch somewhere. And I know I know a jewelry merchant with a wholesale business. And Pete hasn't got so much experience in that line. I think we should better go all and buy it. Then you can select it." So they took me to a nice place to eat, and then we went down 50. A lot of jewelry wholesalers there, and that man brought three stones, two small ones and this big one, on fine tissue paper, and oh, was this a beautiful stone under the light. And I just bent over and said, "Oh, isn't that a beauty?" I didn't think in my wildest dreams that I would get it. And he said, "Do you like that?" I said, "Oh, do I?" And I went on to look at the rest. He says, "We'll take that." And then the same day, he bought the rings, and the stone alone was $1,000. That without setting in those days, and when we didn't have any
inflation,
it was in 1941. We got married 1 week before Pearl Harbor, and so we had it set, and we got married, and it was a good marriage. And I had no idea that there was that much money in the world, but he had. And he handed it all over to me. And then Mr. Heller was, he sold houses, real estate. And his wife was one of my patrons. And he said to my husband, he bought 18 unit apartment house right there near where I lived. And he insisted to go half on my name, and we weren't even married yet. And Mr. Heller said to him, "Man, don't do that. If she don't marry you, she can gain half." And he says, "If I didn't trust her, I wouldn't want to marry her. You set it up the way I want to." And what had happened, mine and then. And then I know that he was in big things. He was big. And in small things, he was little. He couldn't give a quarter or 5 cents away. But after the war, he sent right away $2,000 to my brother that had lost all his cars and everything, and he helped my son with mortgages without never a quarrel over money. He can give away, can give away 10,000 easier than a dollar. And so I always thought, if I get times that I don't have to worry about money or count it even, I'll be so happy. Yes, and then before we married, he came and got me and my son and took us to an automobile place where he had picked out a new DeSoto, all automatic. I got that then, just before we married. And he taught me how to marry. I was 50 years old. It's not so easy to learn from scratch then, but I learned it. And, oh, is my son happy to have a car like that in the family. And he kept his old Dodge. He had an old Dodge with a rumble seat. He wanted me to learn on that Dodge, and that Dodge sometimes wouldn't even go for him if it wasn't just right. Well, I had, from then on, I had no more worries, and my boy had to later on then go to, see, it was Pearl Harbor, and he was had to go to war and had, in the army, and Pete had to be block. What did they call? We had that house there. There were men that took care of the blocks at night. You know, we were wardens. He became a warden, and him and I went into the high school in evenings and took first aid. And we had a build-out basement with rooms, you know, cement. And if something would have happened, that would have been an emergency hospital. We got all set up for that. And we went through the war. And when my son came back, you see, he's gone the whole while, he was ready to get married. He knew a little girl, Mildred, that just recently died. He got married. And everything went smooth, and my husband got 92 years old. We lived 27 years together, and it was a happy marriage. He had no children at all, none at all, and I was never sorry, and he was jealous of my boy. He wanted all my attention, you know, and it took me a little bit to catch on, but when I caught on, then I didn't openly fight him. I would say, oh, yes, young people don't know the value of money. Oh, yes, and just say yes to him. And it got so that after a year or so, I couldn't say a word against my boy. They got to be the best of friends until he died. Real good friends. So that all went well, and I never had to wash hair anymore.
So you sold your business?
No, I tried to sell it and couldn't. So he said, oh, that doesn't matter. And we moved it in our basement for a while, at least to dry us and main thing. But some of my customers just thought they couldn't get their hair cut anyplace else. They couldn't get no permanent. We had to get rid of it. We sold it piece by piece or whatever we could, because I would be busy with them yet, maybe. You know, that's imagination. The next one maybe knew it better than I, but if they get used to a person. So I told them, then I'm going to get busy. I'm not allowed to have a beauty shop down here. And no license and nothing. I got to quit, and I did after a while. Because I was busy taking care of that house. I mean, we had a manager. We kept the manager because there's a lot of rough work to do with it, too.
What house?
That 18 units. We lived in that.
Where was it located?
43 Halle, 43 Echo Street, right in from Figueroa, North Figueroa. It's still there. They sold it later on. Me then. That story I can't tell today. That's too long a story. Involves money and politics and everything else. But we bought the Lyle in Long Beach, which was 32 units. So for a time, I had over 50 unit rentals to look after. I mean, money-wise and electricity. I had to learn how to read electric meters because it was set up that they paid half and I paid half, we paid half, and things like that. I had to learn a new way of life, you might say. But one thing, I always liked people and always got along with people, so I got along with the tenants, although I scared my husband half to death at first. I got five of them moved all at once, and it happened that we had to take the outside wall of that house off. It was built with magnesite. Few houses were, and they didn't hold up that magnesite, was pebble stones mixed in cement. So when we looked at the house, at the apartment, they all looked like rain had come through. And friends of mine, but an old friend, he was a real estater, he looked at it and he said, I wouldn't give them that money. You have to have that wall all torn off. And that's going to be a big expense. And my husband said, oh, that cheapskate. I'm going to give them that $22,000. Just imagine $22,000 for 18 units. And he didn't believe Charlie Fiedler. He didn't believe him. But as soon as we were in there, the next rain really did come through, and that's why they had them all papered, and we had to have that all taken off, plus the outside, and the contractor said $2,000, that would cost $10 or $20 today. And then these apartments were rendered so cheap, the everything furnished, curtains, linen, everything furnished, a one-room apartment, we got $15 rent, and the front apartment had an extra bedrooms and were real pretty. They were 25. And so I told the people that we had this big expense, not my husband, because he wouldn't let me do it. I said, after this house is fixed and you get your place all papered and all, the rent is going up. And I put up the 15 to 25 and the others to 37. And would you believe it, 2 months later, they got frozen at those rents. We would have been frozen. so little, and he was on his other house, it's terrible cheap. Heck, take it that way. Then he said to me, five people were moving out. What are you doing to the people that are moving out? I said, let them move. I get it regulated. Then, you see, through that, he had all the confidence in me. So I did all the business end, and only was good, and he helped to prepare us and pick out the men that did, like that contractor. I mean, I didn't do all of it, but then we had trouble, and we do have trouble, too, coming along. He said, that's your baby. I didn't want no apartment houses. I had enough money to retire. But my husband would have looked pretty sick. Those days when he called himself rich, $50,000 to $70,000 was a lot of money. In the Depression today, $10,000 is hardly nothing. So it was good that I invested it the way we did. He had 10 houses built, he built when he came from South America. He had them built. And all of them were frozen up. New houses at $35 and $25 with a yard and a new garage. And then he had to go and then do the lawn shed. We had to pay the plumbers if something was wrong. On 10 different houses, he had a nice one himself. I said, when we had the 18 units, I said, let's sell all those houses and get it all under one roof. We can do better. And so we had one lady, a German woman, she was the meanest thing. She said she'd mow her own lawn and shoot him down to $25 rent. She had been paying 30, and we couldn't get it up, and she would take care of the yard anyway, things like that. Then we had it and painted it. In the front was the teacher and her father in Los Angeles near Angelus Temple. And, I said to my husband, how if we could only get rid of her when the painter was there and being paid by the hour, she would detain him all the time just so it cost more and more. And because she knew we couldn't do anything. So we looked for a buyer and never said a word to her. And when we had an Italian man that wanted it very bad, we told him she won't show her apartment. She'll be there. I don't care. He said, I buy it unseen. And she did. And she was the first one to move because as a buyer, he could claim a apartment. So he claimed hers. And she was out. And then later on, he moved in the front in the big one. But there was a way, you know, to get out of the thing if you were willing to sell for those prices. Then those houses sold for $3,500. $4,000 was a lot. And the house that my husband got, $7,004, had even maid's quarters in Windsor Hill, a nice house. $7,000, how things were that. Well, I was trying to hold on to the houses. But when we bought, until we would have something to put money into, until we bought the big 32 apartments, then my husband sold them to pay that cash. He never wanted to have any debt, although it would have in the wartime. Debts are better than money always when you get inflation. Well, he couldn't see that. He would say to me, haven't you got enough to eat? Haven't you got enough to wear? And I said, we could do this and do that. I said, I would have so many people that could use it if we bought another lot. You know, we could have, they paid themselves out if you had the trust in it, you know. Well, we did pretty well. And in 1970, Long Beach got our lot. And my husband always wanted to live until that, we knew the city would buy it and tear it down. That's where the city hall is on. And they never came until 70, and then they didn't build on it until 72 or 3 they started. And where the city hall is, the modern city hall, that was just our apartment. But they bought the whole civic center up at that time. And you couldn't, I fought as long as I could to get a halfway decent price out of them. But you had to, they could condemn it, you know, for that, and you had to take what they gave you. I did pretty well. I would be today I would get twice that amount or three times. But it was a headache when the times got bad. We were in AP town, and so many times I had to get up at night where the manager just said, you come down here, I can't do it by myself. 2 o'clock I'd drive down to Chestnut Street where it was on. Now you couldn't do that. You wouldn't dare even. You know, even in your car, it's so dangerous to be out for women. So I was kind of glad to get rid of it. And Highland Park we sold and bought stocks for. And because as you grew older, you can't battle around so good anymore with the public. With time. Well, that's that branch of my life. And I never, after I got established here in California, was never so glad then that I made that move and came out here, although I didn't like it. And the next March in 33, we had that big earthquake. My goodness, I had just gotten in that first beauty shop one of these new permanent waving machines. Somebody went bankrupt over across the street, and I bought it, and I had it put up in there, and it was one of my first permanents I gave to a woman, a hair for head with long hair. And I had about 10 of these curls, you know, these were these kind of 2-1, and the machine was up in the ceiling, and, you know, we were way away from that type. I knew that about then, about, got more for those kind of waves. Well, anyway, I had 11 of those curls ready to be baked and had just baked the thing that goes over them put on when that beauty shop went like this. And I was only here not long. I said to her, she repeated that until she died, does it do this here all the time? And she left and she got up, make me loose. And I got so excited. Those days you had to have a plier to soften that material that was wound around that hard until I had her on. And then we went outside, me with the comb and the uniform, and she with the dressing around and those things sticking up. And the streetcar came on Wayne Street, and the people all laughed. And in a little bit, that streetcar went, and they came out, and they knew why we were running. And then afterwards, the telegraph poles and everything was out yet. You were afraid that stuff would fall on you, so we went back in to the beauty shop again, and I took the things off of her, and I worried, where my boy, that's where my boy. And I had rented a bungalow from this this lady that got me acquainted with that beauty shop, owned bungalows, and she had an empty one. It was all furnished, dishes and all, $10 a month. And we moved in there, and I thought he's home. And when I finally got home, you turn it off.
Yeah.
I wondered where my boy was. And when I got home, went in the door, he said, oh, isn't this fun, Ma? I said, that's some kind of fun. And, you know, if it wasn't Long Beach, but we got big shocks up in Highland Park, too. And I was up all night afraid. But this Mrs. Smith said, you don't need to worry so much. We're built on sand. Not so much can happen in our buildings, only big buildings. And I had been all packed up and ready that next morning to go down where the state board met at this school building. They still teach trades in there. And come down there, and we couldn't run the lot in. It was cracked. It was cracked that they wouldn't let public people in, so I had to go home with my model and with everything and wait another couple of months till I get really my license. See, the shop that I overtook had the shop license, so in a case like that, they gave me a temporary until I got my. But you get ready for that. We had 100 questions to ask. That was over with. It was back in the city hall, and this was not the practical. Right? You have to go through the work, and you get yourself ready, and you're a little jittery. State Port has, you know, you into examination.